County Board of Supervisors is now in session. Sheriff, would you lead us in the flag salute, please?
Yes, ready, begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Heavenly Father, we're grateful that we can be here today. We thank you for the fact that we live in a country where we can celebrate one another, we can celebrate God, we can pledge to the flag and truly be a country that comes together. And this county is part of that country, that nation. I pray for all the work that needs to be done here. Thank you for those who give their time, who serve in various capacities within the county structure, for the Board of Supervisors as they lead out. And Father, we know many times we look at the schedule and a lot of things seem routine, but God, they're all important. I just pray that you give understanding and wisdom in every decision that is made. And we give you thanks for all things in Jesus' name. Amen.
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 Do my little spiel first.
Yes, ma'am.
All righty, the board will be convening today as the Siskiyou County Flood Control and Water Conservation District and Siskiyou Power Authority receives no additional compensation. Could start with Supervisor Valenzuela.
Here.
Supervisor Howell.
Present.
Supervisor Harris.
Present.
Supervisor Cobsa.
Here.
And Supervisor Ogren.
I am present.
Thank you.
I have four presentations from the public. Please note this time slot is for information from the public. No action or discussion will be conducted on matters presented at this time. You will be allowed 3 minutes for your presentation. Written comments can be presented, if so desired, by providing a minimum of 7 copies to the clerk. When addressing the board, please state, excuse me. When addressing the board, please state your name for the record prior to providing your comments. Please address the board as a whole through the chair. Comments should be limited to matters within this jurisdiction of the board. We have 2 comments this morning. Tanya Dowse, please.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the board. Tanya Dowse, I'm with the Siskiyou Economic Development Council, and I just wanted to stop in this morning and share with you a quick update. We are bringing to a conclusion the interior improvements of the Carnegie Library here in Waurika, and I'd like to invite you to come and have a quick sneak peek of those improvements. It's kind of fun to see the transformation as we restored the facility. We have a few months left ahead of us on the exterior work, so stay tuned. In addition, I wanted to let you know that this project was a model for us to demonstrate how to use some tax credit financing tools. In so doing, we've shared that lesson with several projects across the county. The hospital here in Waurika used the New Markets tax credits to help finance their new addition. I think it delivered approximately $8 million in value to the project. We have a project in Dunsmuir that's going to use the model, and we have one in McLeod as well. But more importantly, I'd like to just turn the mic to my colleague, Gillis.
Gillis Robertson, thank you.
Good morning, Gillis Robertson, Siskiyou Economic Development Council. I'm the Director of Ag and Innovations at the Development Council. Just a few updates on what we've got going on in the ag world. Right now we're running a 13-week food venture boot camp for food businesses across Siskiyou County and our other 2 jurisdictions, Trinity and Shasta counties. At the conclusion of that 13-week program, the graduates will be offered the opportunity to apply for a $25,000 grant through the California Office of Small Business, and that will be to improve their business as they wish to grow it. On top of that, we're also working with various other of our partners, the UC Cooperative Extension for one, Chico State, and others on providing various workshops. One of them we're working on right now is an organic transition workshop for Siskiyou County. We're also putting on financial workshops with various financial providers across the region. Various banks are involved in that. others. So that's another program. We're also working on the Healthy Soils program, which I've reported to you before. We're rolling with that. As you can see, it's the middle of spring right now, so people are rolling with their program and getting their seeds planted and compost spread and things like that. So it's really it's a great program. We saw a lot of interest and hopeful that over the next few months we'll see CDFA provide another opportunity for us to continue the program. The funding that this work comes through the state is there again this year, so we're hopeful that if it is offered as another block grant, which we applied for, then we will apply for that again because it was well received and we think there's a need and a want for it. So that's basically my report. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Okay, moving on to item 5, consent agenda. Wishes of the board?
Move to approve.
Second.
Call the vote.
Alrighty, Supervisor Valenzuela?
Yep.
Supervisor Haupt?
Aye.
Supervisor Harris?
Aye.
Supervisor Kopseth?
Aye.
And Supervisor Oprah?
Aye. Moving on to item 6, public requests. Item A, First Five Siskiyou Children and Families Commission.
Good morning, Board of Supervisors and partners and team. My name is Karen Potts, and I have the honor to be the Executive Director of First Five Siskiyou Children and Families Commission, which, as you know, you've invited to designate us as the April Child Abuse, or as the Child Abuse Prevention Council. We are here to invite you to adopt a proclamation for the April Child Abuse Prevention Awareness and Domestic Violence Victim Witness Victim. Supervisor Open, can you help me?
We have Siskiyou Child Abuse Prevention Council Collaborative Proclamation. Siskiyou, let's see, Child Abuse Prevention and Sexual Assault.
Sexual assault, thank you. This happens when I'm nervous, right? And you know,
don't be nervous.
Before that, we'd love to share with you a few things about, a few materials about the Child Abuse Prevention Month and some resources. If we could pass that along to everyone, that would be great. I can do that while you introduce yourself.
Hi, everybody. I'm Mackenzie Bowles, Project Support Coordinator for First Five Siskiyou. I've been working organizing the Child Abuse Prevention Council materials distribution, as well as the events we have going on this year. It's been amazing to see the community support for this project every year. This is my second year working on the project. The first year I was doing a similar project, but it's amazing to see how many community partners, how many businesses, how many individuals get excited about the materials and how they're like, oh, can we have some for our staff? Can we take them home? And those are the blue pinwheels that we see throughout the county, as well as we have 2 yard signs, and we also are working closely with the SAFE programs of our schools, elementary schools. A lot of them are doing the I Feel Loved, I Feel Loved When project, where they do a little art drawing of when the children feel loved, and we're going to be doing a display of that, as well as creating a little book of all of their ideas. They're also participating in the Week of the Young Child activities, which have to do with, like, Music Monday, Tasty Tuesday, Art Thursday, all things that support kids and their development. I grew up in Siskiyou County, and I just love supporting my community and helping those families thrive. Thank you.
Thank you. I did want to bring one report to your attention. It was published in 2023. This is the most recent report on the economics of abuse specifically for Siskiyou County. Please take a few minutes and read, and we'd love to come back and do a presentation on our current efforts. And also, we just yesterday received the kindergarten readiness study that we'll share with the commissioners in April. And we'd love to come back and share that with you or send that to you so that you can have a better understanding of the state of young children in Siskiyou County from the perspective of school readiness.
We'd love to have you back.
Thank you. Thanks for the opportunity, and thank you to Supervisor Kopsev, who's the chair of the First Five Commission, and Commissioner Kalord for being a part of this important work in the community. I appreciate the support.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Very much. Okay.
I'll make the recommended motion.
Please.
Second.
Call for vote, Wendy.
Okay. All righty. Supervisor Valenzuela.
Oh, sure.
Supervisor Help.
Aye.
Supervisor Harris.
Aye.
Supervisor Kopsev.
Aye.
Supervisor Oakman.
Aye.
Thank you.
There you go.
And you need this today, this sign, because we're all by signing this.
Oh, yeah. That would be great.
I'm sending it down right now.
Okay.
You'll send it
before you do. We'll have it done before you go. How's that?
Okay, that sounds great. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Oh, yeah, we can do that.
I appreciate it. Works, I hope. Okay. There's two copies. You can sign both.
Okay, while we're signing that, we'll move on to item 7, District Attorney. Victim witness discussion on the resolution proclaiming April 6th through the 12th, 2025 as Crime Victims Rights Week in Siskiyou County. Good morning.
Good morning. I am Cynthia Billingsley. I am the Victim Services Coordinator at the Siskiyou County District Attorney's Office. So next week is National Crime Victims Rights Week. This year's theme is about kinship, connection, and healing. Wikipedia says that kinship is the web of social relationships that form an important part of the lives of all humans in all societies. Kinship is where victim advocacy begins. When we feel a kinship with someone, we connect with them. When we connect with someone, we can walk through difficult circumstances with them as they find a way to heal and become a survivor. Sometimes that includes a walk through the criminal justice system. At this time, we would like to thank the survivors that we work with for their bravery. We appreciate the courage it takes to speak up for yourself and others when you come to court to testify. We want to take this time to recognize these survivors and applaud them for helping us in the pursuit of justice. Next Thursday, on April 10th, we will be hosting an open house in the Victim Services Department here at the District Attorney's Office, so it's over in the mezzanine. We would invite everybody to come. It'll be held from 11:30 a.m. to 2:30 p.m. We will have snacks and raffles and be able to answer questions about what our role is as victim advocates. With that, I would request that you read our proclamation for crime victim rights.
Okay.
Would you like me to read that, or would you like
what
to?
Why don't you read that for us? Thank you.
Okay. I submitted this resolution, and it says, whereas crime affects individuals, families, and communities in profound and varied ways, often leaving lasting physical, emotional, and social challenges. Whereas the concept of kinship underscores the connections that build bridges to support services and shared strength among survivors, advocates, and communities. Whereas kinship is the foundation of victim advocacy, inspiring trauma-informed care that meets survivors where they are. Whereas through kinship, we build peer networks and community alliances that empower survivors, foster resilience, and offer pathways to healing. Whereas kinship reminds us of the strength that comes from connection, the importance of listening to every voice, and the power we have to create lasting change when we work together. Do you want me to read the last paragraph as well?
I'll read that for you.
Thank you.
It is now, therefore, be it resolved by the Siskiyou County Board of Supervisors that the week of April 6th through 12th, 2025, be proclaimed as Crime Victims' Rights Week in Siskiyou County. This proclamation reaffirms our dedication to building connections, standing in kinship with survivors, and creating a future where healing and hope are within each for everyone. The foregoing resolution was adopted at a regular meeting of the Board of Supervisors of Siskiyou County, State of California, held on the first day of April 2025 by the following vote. Wishes of the Board.
Move to approve.
Second.
All righty. Supervisor Valenzuela?
Yeah.
Supervisor Help?
Aye.
Supervisor Harris?
Aye.
Supervisor Cobbs?
Aye.
And Supervisor Oakman?
Aye.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Moving on, we have the sheriff. Discussion, direction, possible action on the issue of payment to the state of California for $100,000. On our votes.
Good morning, Sheriff Jeremiah LaRue. Morning, Chair Hogren, and members of Board of Supervisors. This is a continuance from March 18th. We've been in communication with Senator Daley's office trying to get some resolution diplomatically to resolve the boat issue. I haven't heard anything since the 21st of March. The hope is that the state would take our old boat that we aren't currently using back instead of having us pay for the new one that we had. So they did give us an extension, the state did, till April 20th to receive payment of $100,000 or return the boat. So we're still given a little more time as far as I know. I don't know, Supervisor Kopstep, if I may ask if you heard anything back.
I talked to Senator Daley's office this morning, and it sounds like we're at a brick wall. It sounds like the Department of Boating and Waterways is not happy with us, and so it sounds like there's not much more that we can do. And I guess there's some issues over the big boat as well, not just this one. I'm not cued to that, but it's frustrating, yes, but it comes back to every time we receive a grant, if we don't dot the I and cross the T, these kind of things come back and slap us. So I don't know what else to do. Senator Daley's office gave it the good push, but it doesn't look like we're going to get it across the finish line.
And with that, I guess the recommendation would be, I know we have to get a check or return the boat. We do want to keep the boat. So I guess depending on the time period, if I don't know if there could be a motion to maybe give it a little more time, and then we'll just give them the check by the 20th, which would be, I guess, the final extension date, depending on how long it takes, of course, to get that processed and sent out. So we will be using non-general fund to purchase the boat and return essentially what they had given us, $100,000 for in grant funding to purchase it. So that's my recommendation to the board, whatever your wishes may be. I think that's the cleanest thing to do at this point.
Through the chair, at this point, why would we delay? It doesn't look like anything is going to happen between now and the 20th.
Yeah, I just, in just in case, but I would agree with you. I'm trying to be optimistic.
No earthquake in Sacramento or what?
Yeah, I know. I know we're dealing with the state, I guess. No, you're correct. I mean, I don't think there is a need to delay. The hope would be that maybe there'd just be another opportunity, but.
So where does $100,000 non-general fund come from?
It comes from our, we're going to use our rural sheriff's funding, which comes from the state, so it won't impact the general fund.
So that's to keep the new boat, and the old boat still goes to Dillard? Where are we keeping the old boat?
Sounds like there's an issue there, but I'm not sure.
Yes, there are plenty of issues with that. So we've been trying to get rid of the 2012 boat probably since 2012. No, not really, but somewhere shortly after that, probably at least 5 or 6 years, it is owned by the state. They gave it to us as a grant. We've used it intermittently. They did claim that we don't use it enough. We have tried to remedy that by giving it back to them or another agency that could actually use it, because this vessel belongs in the ocean, if you ask me. It's pretty big. It doesn't work in our lakes, especially since two of them no longer exist. So what we would like, we've been trying to do, Del Norte was somebody who had requested it, but it apparently has to go back to the state, and there has to be all these types of inspections that go along with it before they can accept it, even though it's their own boat. There's a lot of red tape with that. But the goal is still to give that back so that some other agency could utilize it better than we are.
Well, it's almost worth $100,000. We'll trade it.
That's
what we
did.
Yeah.
They're not happy with this.
No.
Either way, I'm not sure what the practicality of this coming back is to know the inevitable. I would certainly wait till the 20th to give a check, though. I mean, I know that much. But, you know, I guess we're stuck with that's where we're at.
It'll take some time to get it through the process, but I'll try to reach out again. But I think we are at the inevitable, which is we're just going to buy a boat and try to get rid of the old boat, as we have been for years.
So do we have to take these items separately and vote, one and two?
You certainly can, yeah, for the transfer of funds.
Okay. Any more conversation? Okay, so for item one, wishes of the board, in order to request to issue payment.
Well, before we get to Cass, one more question.
Absolutely.
Yes.
$100,000 sounds like a lot for a boat to me. I mean, you said we need a smaller boat. I'm vaguely familiar with the previous boat. Size of it. I always thought it was oversized for Lake Siskiyou as the example.
Yes.
Is it a better option to send that boat back and use $100,000 to buy a more appropriate boat for us?
Well, we had this boat was specced out. I know it seems expensive. It's
okay.
Top of the line for what our needs are. Should last forever.
Okay.
But it's...
Okay, I just want to make sure we explored all the possibilities.
No, that's... Appreciate that. It's a great question.
Okay. Thank you. That answers for that.
I move to approve one.
So for number one,
yes, ma'am.
To authorize the sheriff to issue the payment, correct?
Yes.
And who was the second? Oh, thank you.
Further discussion, can we add to the motion to expedite the return of the River Hawk? I guess that's the big one. So that
is
later.
Is that the 2012 vote?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I don't think, is that one part of the agenda item? It's not part of the agenda item. Perhaps that one could come back for the 15th.
Well, I'll just add that I received that message.
Okay.
We are in the process. I know there was an inspection, and although it's not on the agenda, that is what we're aiming towards.
Because what I'm trying to do is clear the deck for the Department of Water and Boating or whatever they call themselves. But let's clear the deck so that we can get off the bad list.
Okay, call for vote.
Okay, Supervisor Valenzuela.
Against.
Supervisor Help.
Aye.
Supervisor Harris.
Aye.
Supervisor Kopsa.
Aye.
And Supervisor Overin.
Aye. Moving on to item two, the transfer of funds of $100,000.
I'll make the motion.
Second.
Okay. Supervisor Valenzuela?
Sure.
Supervisor Help?
Aye.
Supervisor Harris?
Aye.
Supervisor Oberyn?
Aye.
Supervisor Kopsen?
Aye.
Okay.
Let's keep going.
Okay. Thank you for your time.
Item C, Agriculture, presentation on update of current wolf activity, livestock depredations, and the status of compensation program for livestock depredations. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning. Mr. Pat Griffin, our livestock wolf liaison is there to give you an update on our WOOF issues in Siskiyou County. I would like to mention that it looks like this grant supporting Mr. Griffin is going to be renewed again, so it's good news.
Madam Chair, members of the board, Patrick Griffin, Siskiyou County WOOF liaison. So there's been a lot of information, a lot of anxious people about our WOOF situation. Really, things haven't changed very much since 2022, when wolves really began depredating on cattle in our county. So over the last few years, since we've had the whale backpack, there's been 78 confirmed depredations and 9 probable confirmed. So that's quite a number of animals to lose, and it is substantial. I don't think there's another pack anywhere that has killed this many cattle, because in other places they get taken out when they are chronically depredating on cattle. But we're in California, and wolves are protected, both state and federally listed as an endangered species, so take is prohibited. But ranchers are really trying hard to deter wolves. They're implementing everything they can to try to limit losses and decrease vulnerability to their livestock. Currently, there is a compensation program in place to reimburse for losses, for direct loss, and that's for the actual death of the animal. And there's $600,000 that was appropriated, and $500,000 of that is still remaining. About $100,000 has been used. So the concern is, if things escalate, that could be gone pretty quickly. And the hope is that there will somehow be some legislative action to create a sustained fund for wolf depredations. And hopefully there can be some appropriate action to make that happen. So right now, the whale backpack is kind of been in a little bit of a lull as far as depredation goes. And I think we can attribute a lot of that to the heavy natural mortality in the severe winter that we had this year. A lot of calves came down with pneumonia, so we had some natural losses for them to feed on, because they certainly will select the dead animal whenever they can. So they're opportunists, they'll feed on whatever they can find. So it's hard for me to get all excited and hyped up about the threat of wolves and the human safety aspect of it because of the depredations, but I understand that there is a risk, that there's a risk with all predators. There's a risk with mountain lions. I feel more threatened by mountain lions when I'm out there following a wolf trail than I do from the wolves, either mountain lions or bears. But the important thing is that we have the protection available, or the ability to take an animal that is causing a life-threatening situation. And that does exist currently. I think you'd probably have to have some substantial evidence, but there is that provision in the code right now. So it's important, though, to start the process of trying to figure out, what is it going to take to get to where we're going to delist these animals? I mean, there's a robust population in North America of gray wolves. So we happen to be kind of on the leading edge. Maybe it's a little bit south of us now, because they keep expanding in California. The difficult thing that I perceive is convincing the people of California that they no longer need to be protected, because I think there's people that think they need to be populating the whole state clear to San Diego. And that's probably not going to happen, but people believe it should. So that's going to be an obstacle. So this status review thing, for reviewing the status, the listing status under California Endangered Species Act. It's really should have been done already, because I think it calls for a 5-year review after 5 years of the listing. So we're well past that. It was listed officially in 2017. So 2022, there should have been a status review. That hasn't happened. The California Wolf Plan states that it would be an opportune time to do the status review when we're in phase three. Now, right now, we're in phase two. We've got 4 breeding pairs or more. Phase three starts after we've had 8 breeding pairs for 2 consecutive years. Now, we could start that transition period this coming year. I believe there is likely to be 8 breeding pairs in 2025. And then, so we'd have to wait till another year with 8 breeding pairs, and we could start the process in 2027 or 2028. And so we need to think about that a little bit, of whether we want to pursue the status review now, or would it be better to wait until there's more wolves and more evidence that they should be delisted after there's 8 breeding pairs? And that's kind of the way I would look at it, because it's going to be a challenge no matter what. I mean, I don't care if there's 100 breeding pairs, people are going to say they still need protection. So that's something the board needs to think about in pursuing the status review, is whether it's beneficial to do it now, or is it maybe a strategic plan to do it when it's more likely to be passed, you know, to be implemented. So that's kind of all I had. I can answer some questions if the board members would like to ask questions. I'm sure I have questions.
Going back, I do have a couple questions. One, Michael, I work with us regularly, as you know, with the small committee we have, working with CDFW. The one thing that never comes up that I am curious about, even more curious these days, is most states have in place disease protections for humans, and it's largely centered around the health bulletins that they put out to hunters to wear gloves, et cetera, et cetera. Some of the diseases wolves carry and transmit to other ungulates. I am not aware of anything the state is doing, but are you aware of those diseases present in our wolves or present in the population of the ungulates?
I'm not aware that there's anything present, but I would certainly not. I would expect that it is, because I think it's a common thing. But the only time I've handled wolves, I've had gloves on, so during the capture processes, we did capture 2 wolves this year in the whale backpack, and everybody that handles them has to have gloves on. I mean, that's a procedure or a precaution that's taken and enforced by the agency when they're there. So, but I think it's a legitimate concern. I would be concerned also about handling the scat as well, you know, because we collect scat samples and always use gloves for that purpose as well.
I appreciate that. I don't see repeating here today, but the reason I bring it up is it seems like there's a role here that hasn't been played with the health department, taking a look at how we need to warn citizens in the county, because we have a lot of woods workers, foresters, a lot of hunters, and now that we have such a plethora of wolves, it seems timely to bring this topic up and make people aware of what they could confront.
That's an appropriate move.
Next question I have was, and this is more for the board, I guess, is that one of the things that confounds me, and a lot of things that confound me in California, but the California ESA is, I work with ESA a lot across lot of states. It's one of the very few that I'm aware of that does not have a take statement in it. That is horribly irresponsible because it puts anybody even doing habitat improvement work or handling an animal in jeopardy violating the ESA. So I would urge this board to work with our elected representatives and maybe even send a letter from this board to take a look at revising the California ESA to put that in there. It sure would make the recovery of species much easier. Would also allow us to deal with predatory issues, particularly when there may be human life involved, where people are just apprehensive about protecting themselves, which they clearly can do, but they're always fearful that because of that issue with the take statement, not being in the California ESA, they'll always be in jeopardy by some big group that wants to come in and make a statement.
We have pursued that to some degree and without very much success. The department seems reluctant, the agency,
I don't care about the department. That's, to me, that every time I talk with them, it seems to be a power issue with them. They don't want to give up any power because they can control that kind of thing. This helps our partners. It helps everybody that's trying to do good work out here on the ground, and it would also go a long way in getting cooperation with large landowners in this state to be able to actually legitimately work on species recovery. Yeah, I didn't mean to cut you off, but I come up to here with
understood.
I also want to, I brought this up a little bit too, and I urge this board to look at ways that we could push on the state's lack of initiative, if you will, to either follow the Wolf Plan, because in my mind, last I read it, I think we're at the brink of them beginning a process of delisting, and what I see them doing right now is, rather than taking the identified functioning packs that's in the Wolf Plan, now they're making subcategories. So what they're trying to do, this is my conclusion, they're trying to avoid the process of delisting. And they're inventing new ways that's not in the plan so that they don't have to do it. So there's the board, get involved. We need to be involved, and I think we need to push on this pretty hard. Any advice from you?
Well,
I'd love to hear.
I think that's more of a statement than a question, and I don't disagree with you. As I said, I think the status review will be the thing that kind of leads to that, and we need to figure out when we want to push for that. I mean, it's due now. It was due in 22.
Right.
So, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know what to tell you, but I think it would be beneficial, as I said earlier, to do it when we're in phase three, and then we have pretty much all the ammunition we need to say that we've reached recovery. See, the problem with the Wolf Plan, it doesn't have any numbers. It doesn't have any criteria to define recovery. So, as I said, there's people that are going in California that are going to oppose anything that's going to take the protection of wolves away. I don't care how many wolves we have. That's going to be the challenge.
I'm going to shut up here in a minute, but one thing I just want to remind everybody who might listen to the audio is that, direct cost replacement for the loss of a chow based on what its market price is for amber has no bearing on what the financial burden is for the rancher. It's taken generations of animals, to develop that herd, and then you take those genes out of their gene pool, they're back several generations trying to recover. The costs are much more than the direct cost.
One thing I've been pushing for in that regard is to create an expansion factor for the depredations that we do find, because for direct loss, as you know, that's only one part of it. So in Oregon, I think they're about to establish a 5 times multiplication factor for a loss. So you get a confirmed loss, you get 5 times the value of that animal at market. That doesn't cover everything, but it's a lot better than what we're getting now. If we, in the pilot program, when we had paid for presence and payment for deterrent costs and all of that, we were more whole in our compensation process. But as you know, that funding went away pretty quickly. So either we need to get a better funding stream or try to get the money directed more appropriately where the losses occur. And that's the next best thing in my mind, is to have that multiplication factor instead of trying to calculate the deterrent costs and the pay for presence and all that. It gets pretty complicated and people take advantage of it. So yeah, that's just one way.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Sure. So I think that we have some form of a letter talking about what Supervisor Haupt is talking about, mm-hmm. to push at this Cal Fish and Wildlife. One of the things that happened last week at Rural County Representatives of California, RCRC, Secretary Crowfoot did speak to our group. The wolf issue came up fairly heavily. And he understands the problem. He did verbally say that he supports other Western states' policies on wolf management, which we know they're listed in other states federally, but they're also able to take out bad wolves that are eating livestock because they have to be trained not to do that. Unfortunately, in California, the only food supply that we really have for wolves is livestock, because the ambulant population is minimal at best, and not enough to sustain, you know, as you've indicated, what the number of wolf kills that we've had in Siskiyou alone match that in, I think, even Montana, where wolf populations are over 1,000. I'm sensing that the department knows there's a problem here. I don't know that we can wait, as you indicate, till 27 or 2028. I don't know that the ranching community can bear that burden. I think that we're at that point now where it's kind of make or break. They're pretty frustrated. State of California, in my opinion, if they want these things, wolves, they need to pay for them, and they need to step up with a compensation fund of at least $10 million to be able to at least reimburse these ranchers that are having difficulty, even at the 5 times rate that you're talking about, Patrick. I get it. I just, it's out of hand. I don't know how else to say that. And I think we can all agree on that. We've got more wolves than we can feed, and the only thing they can eat is livestock, unfortunately. And there isn't a training mechanism to keep them from doing that. So with that, I don't know. I know the department's getting ready to roll out some new information, I think, next week about, I don't want to call it harassment, but some new tools or mechanisms to be able to help ranchers. I'll wait to see what those are. But at this point, I guess, you know, I appreciate the work that you do and the trappers, what they do. Your position is grant funded. I think the trappers are general fund. Yes? So we have 2 trappers that are general fund maintained. So, I mean, I don't know how much more proactive Siskiyou can get. I know that the other part of it is that ranchers need real time data to indicate where the wolf presence is, that's helpful, because a lot of times they're, I'll call it not wasting time, but they're out in the field when wolves may not be present, but still trying to abate or harass them, even if they're, you know, just being prepared in case they do show up. But real-time data, I know, would be real helpful as well. And I know the drone thing is getting ready to roll out. And I guess human voice activated drones are, I guess they work in Oregon from what I'm hearing, but Oregon also has a TAPE provision. So I think one thing that the board needs to do, besides this letter that's I think in the process now, is also a letter of federal delisting, because I know that that will help the state with its position, because they have to go to U.S. Fish and Wildlife first, I guess, before they can do anything in the state, which is kind of bizarre, but anyway.
So one thing I'd like to mention in response to you is that the notification system has been much improved recently. I get notifications every morning by 8 o'clock, usually, or shortly after, and can get that information out. And in addition to the locations, I've recently been receiving cluster points where the wolves have stayed for a period of time, which means they're likely feeding on something. They're either feeding on something or they're resting. And that wasn't happening before, so, or at least not as much. So, and they are going to roll out a notification system where people can access the location. It's going to be buffered somewhat. Mm-hmm. I don't know exactly how big the polygons will be, and I'm not sure it'll be live. It will probably have some delay, but that's better than what we've had.
Thank you.
Mr. Harris, I know you have questions.
I don't know if I have questions. I think that, you know, the meetings that we've had and the direction we have moving forward is about as much as we can do right now. I do agree with a strong push to probably through the Malthus office for a federal delisting. I think that needs to happen. I agree with Supervisor Hopp, a take mechanism has to happen here. Like Supervisor Hopp and yourself were talking about, this goes far beyond, you know, and you guys didn't even touch on the preg rates of cattle due to stress.
Sure.
You know, we're not accounting for that loss. And I don't know how you account for that loss, but when you have farmers and ranchers that are, you know, saying that they went from a 95% to below 50% preg rate, that's pretty significant. And the financial component of that is tremendous for our local groups. You know, we don't have a whole lot of huge beef ranches here, so, you know, I mean, they're big, but, you know, in comparison to some of the
right.
some of the other places, so those kind of losses are a major hit, and I think that we need to pursue across the board, preg rate drops, the kind of what you were talking about that we started out with. How do we get back there?
Well, I think you need to consider the combination of things. We've got one producer, one rancher that's probably getting close to 50 depredations. So you take that number and then add on what you're talking about, the other associated losses, the indirect losses, the weight loss, the sluffed calves, the pregnancy problems, and it's really you're talking about a huge amount of money. And that's always what I said. You know, the statewide cattlemen may not be impacted drastically by wolves, but for an individual producer that's right on the leading edge of things, it can be devastating, and it is taking its toll. So.
Well, Nick, I do believe that, you know, this is part of a bigger problem with management by the agency to begin with. I mean, they're doing the same thing here that they're doing with things like salmon, because they're taking this species, so their lion is protected as well. But these wolf populations have an effect on those lion populations at the same time. And I think that we need to continue to point out that this single protection mechanism that they use for these animals is damaging the entire system as well.
Any other comments?
Thank you.
I got a little more.
you knew that. I'm well aware of the Martins situation, you know, and they seem to be at the center of the bullseye most of the time with their operation. But have we as a county reached out to to our federal counterparts, public land managers, to understand what's happening in general across with grazing permits on public lands.
Well, I'm not sure about that, but I know that we've had U.S. Fish and Wildlife out there on the Table Rock Ranch and participating in activities, and I've taken them on field trips so they can see firsthand, but not necessarily the U.S. Forest Service allotment.
We have a number of permittees in the Tennant area. Other areas in the county, that some of these livestock producers must be experiencing losses because of the unconstrained environment that cattle are in.
Well, sure they are.
Anyway, I just don't hear, I don't get any feedback at all, you know, regarding those operations. And then the other thing I was thinking here too is that one of the things that people were considering a letter. The state is good at touting sustainable populations of predators. But I don't know if you're aware, but I'm not aware that they've ever done a prey-based assessment in establishing those numbers.
Well, they did some kind of a modeling program when they were doing the wolf plan, but they sure didn't look at the numbers here in our area. I mean, that's one of the biggest problems we have here is we don't have the deer populations. We've got some elk, but for some reason the wolves have not really been following the elk that much. I kind of thought they would. Mm-hmm. I was wrong, at least to date.
Yeah.
But our deer numbers, and that's another thing that needs to be addressed in that letter, is the management practices for our ungulates is non-existent.
Yeah. Well, the reason I bring it up is that in population dynamics and predators and prey, the only way to control a predator is to control its food source. And then naturally, those numbers will moderate whatever is available. But we can't continue not to have a take statement and provide an alternate food source that's not natural, which is livestock, because those predator numbers will continue to increase. That's just a basic function of population dynamics.
Yeah, we have an artificial carrying capacity because of the livestock.
Correct.
So, yeah, they can exist.
Sure.
Whether there's deer or not.
Right.
That's the problem.
Yeah.
That's it, exactly.
Thank you.
Anything else? Thank you, sir, for all your work. I'm not going to belabor any of this because everybody said what I would have said 100 times over, but I will leave you with this. I believe that the agencies are very reactive instead of proactive on all of these management policies, and I hope that we can form a letter that will incorporate the board's wishes and words, because they're all accurate, and I hope we can move that letter straight up the chain, and really do appreciate all your work, and that we can hopefully get the agencies to employ people that want to stay and employ people that can give us data that is accurate and over time can produce better information for us, because I think that's one of the things that we lack is data from the agencies, because we can't ever seem to get it. We can produce our own data. You've been out there working for years, and you can produce data back from landowners and everybody else. We work really hard to get that. But the agencies, every time we ask, we can't ever get consistent data because they don't have consistent employees. So that's been a frustration for years. Whether it's elk, whether it's coyotes, whether it's wolves, we can't ever seem to get data. So the more we can work to produce data, the better it is for us, but it's got to come the other way too. And again, the money, that $600,000 is not enough. We started off with, what, $3 million originally? Now it's $600,000? That's nowhere near enough. So we have to fight to try to get that money higher and higher and higher, because that is, it's nowhere near enough. These people have spent generations building their herds. That is nowhere near enough compensation. So
I agree.
we need to push for that as well. So thank you so much for all the work you do.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Okay. Take a breath. Are you okay?
I'm okay. We'll go through one more and then come back. Take a break.
Item D, Health and Human Services. You just kept running up above you. Okay, discussion, direction, and possible action on the enforceable service funding commitment letter. We'll read that in a bit.
Good morning, Chair O'Brien, members of the board, Sarah Collard, Health and Human Services.
Madeline Bryan, Housing Coordinator, Health and Human Services.
So we are back. We appreciated the feedback and direction the board provided the last time we brought this item before you, and we have been working with our partners to address your concerns. And you will see in the information we provided that our partners have agreed to prioritize veterans in this project. We provided an example of an MOU and made attempts through the other documentation we provided to clarify the roles of each of the partners for this project. And we are here again seeking your approval for our enforceable funding commitment letter. And we're happy to answer any questions.
Discussion. Supervisor Howard.
Why did you go to me? So I appreciate the work that was done on the veterans piece. That is exactly what I was looking for. However, it's not quite enough for me because it's not in the letter. That language is not in the letter, and it's not in the MOU. And quite frankly, I don't trust everything to follow through on anything. And until it's locked into the process, you still won't have me. So that's where I'm at. I'm sorry to say that, because I know you worked to get that in there. But it's just a piece of paper at this point to me. It just doesn't have anything.
I think we had requested an MOU, and what we're seeing is a template MOU from, I think, Sonoma County, so it doesn't apply here. I don't know that what will transfer to this MOU, so that's a hesitation for me. It still determines that there's $548,000-some-odd annually in-kind services for this project, so it targets this project. And I think that was my biggest concern as well on the first go. So from my perspective, if Danco needs this type of service to be able to develop this housing, then Danco should be paying that $548,000 and some odd to the county to expand the services, to provide those services to this housing project. So short of that, I can't support this. I don't know what else to say to that. I mean, these housing units will be rentals, is that correct?
Yes.
If they're for homeless that can't afford a home now, how are they going to afford rent for this project? Danco isn't in this just at the goodness of their hearts. There's got to be a profit line in there for them to be able to do that. So I don't know how that occurs with the population you're trying to serve. The veterans thing is great. If that can actually be done, have veterans been prioritized for the, I don't know, maybe the two rooms that had been filled that were here last on the other housing project we have, were those filled at all?
Yes, those units are full.
Was it veteran prioritized?
Veterans were not a priority population for that project.
Okay.
That project was special project, No Place Like Home program that required us to prioritize individuals with a serious mental illness.
And this does kind of the same, doesn't it? This project?
Yes, the difference is that in advance we would be prioritizing veterans. It would be built into the tenant selection plan and possibly include set-aside units as well. The Home Key Plus program has two priority populations, individuals with behavioral health challenges and veterans. So it has those two priority populations.
And so the other thing that comes to mind is, and maybe we're not doing it anymore, was behavioral health looking at a remodel on the South Week. Used to be, I think, a Quality Inn or a motel. Is that still our project?
This is the same project that we were looking at the hotel for, and this developer has decided to do a new construction project. I think that there have been lots of issues, as you can imagine. A lot of the hotels in town are old, and just, you know, the cost to refurbish them is,
so is
my understanding,
okay,
right? Yeah,
okay.
Not that different. With regard to including the amount for the, you know, the cost of the services in the letter, that's a requirement under the NOPA. So we did, you know, we consulted with our consultant who, you know, we explored that, and we're not able to make that change.
Understood. And so it does target this amount for the next 15 years to this project.
And these are services, and as I know that Madeline shared with you when she was here last, these are services that we will be providing anyway. And I heard your concern at the last meeting about this is the population, right? But we will be providing these services to these people anyway. It's just that, and I think you saw in the letter, right, we spent $1.4 million on housing, direct housing costs last year, because, as you know, and I think this is true throughout the whole county, but the vacancy rate in Wairika is between 1 and 3%. And so we don't have options. And in many of our programs, we are required to house people. And so, you know, we will continue to pay that $1.4 million or whatever that is to house people in hotels. But with this project, we could leverage the city and not be paying those direct housing costs. And, you know, everything that's coming out of Sacramento, it's clear to me that there's more and more pressure on counties and more risk for counties who aren't able to house the populations that we're mandated to house. So we are required to house people in many of our programs.
So who pays for that housing if the people that you're trying to house can't afford it at any
rate? MHSA pays for it. We, CalWORKs pays for it. We have multiple programs in which we're required to house individuals and families, and we do every year. But we do it in hotels because we don't have other available housing in the county.
And we've purchased a motel, haven't we?
No.
We did
consider that with the last Home Key, a prior round of Home Key, but we didn't move forward. That was also a city project, and they that project fell through. So this is this, you know, another iteration of that same.
Gotcha. Thank you.
In regards to your concern about the MOU, this is an example MOU that Danco has, but I really would like to highlight the differences in this project, because in that case, Sonoma County was a co-applicant, and it was for the No Place Like Home program. So there's a lot of language in there that would not apply to this project, and the county has discretion in drafting that. Should this project become an actual project and not just aspirational, because it is competitive, and even should the city submit an application, they may not be awarded the funding. But if they are, and if we had a project, the board would have the ability to review that MOU at that time and ensure that the language about veterans in that MOU is sufficient before approving the MOU. And it will be provided in the tenant selection plan that Danco will submit. We met with the HCD, the granting agency, to discuss putting not just prioritizing veterans, which would mean any time there was a vacancy, we would fill up those vacancies with veterans before moving on to another population, but even creating set-aside units. And so they're trying to see if we can work with the VASH program, it's a voucher program for veterans, to to further set aside units for that population. So we're working with the state on if that's a possibility for us to include in the application.
Well, I was going to say that those are all, there's nothing finite about any of that yet, and yet we're approving something that if it does get approved, then we're going to be back to the drawing board on an MOU. And that's kind of like the horse before the cart. We did that with the one up on Foothill when we had to sell the property so the grantee could actually get the grant money before, you know, they even had money. So, we like to chase grants because the money's out there, but you can see what happened with the sheriff's boats on two of them were, you know, now we got to pay back. So I'm not comfortable.
Just in regards to the veteran question and nothing being finalized, it is in the letter that unhoused veterans will be prioritized for units via the tenant selection plan. So that is a condition that has been put into the letter. On page 2, under prioritization.
And we understand your concern with regard to the MOU. You know, we work hard to be good stewards of the taxpayers' money. We engage outside counsel. We don't, but counsel engages outside counsel with the expertise in this area. So it takes quite a bit of time to develop an MOU of our staff, and so we want to be responsive to the request, but at the same time we also want to manage our resources well, which is why we didn't, request that council assist us in developing an MOU for a grant that we don't know whether we'll receive or the city will receive or not. So we understand the concern, and that's why we're bringing you this example.
So, I missed that, I'm sorry.
That's a nice.
It's a pretty brief statement. Could we change that to also include that that prioritization will be documented and enforced to the MOU?
I think that would be possible, yeah.
I'm trying to make a tie to something more than a letter. That
more concrete condition, yeah.
Yeah.
Prioritization will be documented through a forthcoming MOU. Was that the language?
Enforced.
Yeah.
Prioritization will be enforced through.
Through the MOU.
Through an MOU. Okay.
Supervisor Reynolds, by the way.
Sure. I think I previous leaned housing across the board. And so if the answer is not to move this forward, it's where are we going to get housing for people that need it most? The project that we did over here on Foothill, would you call that a success at this point?
Yes. I mean, we've housed 49 households there, low income housing and, people who are eligible through behavioral health.
I know we did a tour of that when they did grand opening. I think I need to do a follow-up a year down the line type of thing. Again, this project is going to come replicated. I believe Mount Shasta wants to do something similar.
They are in the process.
I have to tell you that, and I appreciate your concerns. I mean, obviously homeless veterans, I don't know how we wouldn't say homeless veterans aren't a priority. Again, at the end of the day, if not this, then what? I mean, what's the answer to addressing homelessness and the problems associated with. I think it's all intertwined. Sometimes I think we never focus it. I mean, across the board, there's other things that impact this. I mean, my wife works at one-room schoolhouse down in Dunsmuir, so to speak, and I just see the stressors on families trying to find housing, all the things that are associated with it. To me, it's something that I support because, again, I don't know what the answer is to not support this. If we're not going to do this, then I would argue the board shouldn't be taking any grants, shouldn't be doing anything. So forget boat grants, forget wolf grants, forget all that stuff. That's not the answer. The answer is how are we going to make something work for us? I get that we look for a Sonoma MOU, but we have to tailor it for Siskiyou County like we have to do for Andy. And I think we have to be very selective about how we do that. But I think our concerns, whether it's homelessness or what, can be addressed, and so I support this.
So I just have one more procedural question. When the MOU is developed, will that come back through this board for approval?
Yes, yes, yes it will.
Okay. Thank you.
So I still have several of the same issues. You know, we still have previous projects that are not completed. How long's base camp been going on? And there's still hasn't been a foot set in that building. You know, I think that putting another facility in Wairega instead of somewhere else along the I-5 corridor is irresponsible. Like I said, I feel like you're kind of building a draw of this. These people that have these issues that, you know, are required to go into these places into one location and making that one locality deal with where you've congregated them all. And, I mean, we see that as an issue on the Hill. And I'll be real honest with you. I don't believe housing is our main issue here. Even if you put these people in homes, they're still going to have the mental disorders. They're still going to have the substance abuse, and we're still not addressing that. And when there's money out there to do these things, and the response I get is we can't staff those things, we need to be figuring that out instead of chasing this. So I'll just be really honest with you. Until we start moving on those real solutions, mental health facilities, substance abuse facilities that we have none of in our area, I'm in the future. Until we start moving in that direction, I'm not going to support any of these. So I just want to be very, very upfront with you so that there's no misconception or illusion. Until we start working on those real solutions, I feel like we're just spinning our wheels and we're wasting taxpayer money.
So having a high priority for veterans, what if the state says you can't do that? And then you have to come back here and say, yeah, best intent, we tried, but guess what? We got to give the boat back or pay $100,000. What are we going to do then?
So it's actually called out in the NOFA as a priority population. So you're encouraged to prioritize veterans for this project. So that is,
it's also under Prop 1, right? This is Prop 1 funding is what funds these projects, and that was a priority for that, that initiative. So,
but it wasn't a priority until Supervisor Help brought it up the last time. So why all of a sudden now it fits the mold?
So this, project is driven by the city, and they approached us to be the service provider, but we consider it and encourage them to take ownership of the project, just given the amount of projects the county is already handling to work on this issue. And you can select either or both populations. You just have to be serving one or both of those populations. And they hadn't originally proposed that. But when we received your feedback, we came to the city and said, would you be willing to have this project prioritize that population? Whereas before, they were only considering behavioral health challenged.
Well, I'll just come back to, for the amount of services, the 500 and some odd thousand a year, if those are required to be able to put this in place, then Danco should be paying that bill to expand the services so that we don't take away from other services in the county. Thank you.
Anybody else? I can't see where we don't need more housing for these people. I do know that there is a population out there that is not going to utilize this housing, will not utilize any housing, no matter what we offer. There are folks out there that are not going to take advantage of it. There's a population that just wants to live that way, and we're not going to change that. But there's also a population that if there's an opportunity, they are going to take advantage of it, and I think that we need housing. No matter what, we need housing. This community does not have enough. Whether it's in Wairega or Doris or Mount Shasta or Tennant, we need housing. And if there's an opportunity to build it, we should. because we don't always get an opportunity. And if we can collaborate with a city, whether it's Wairika, or Weed, or Mount Shasta, or Tennant, or Doris, we should. And if there is an opportunity to utilize services that we already provide, these are not new services, these are not different services, these are services we already provide to people. And if we can expand them, if we can use them in a more effective, efficient way, which is what we're trying to do here, I think we should. It's a way to do it more cheaply. I shouldn't say cheaply. Efficiently. Less costly. I think we should take advantage of that opportunity. This is something I think that is a good thing. Is an opportunity. This is something that I don't see as negative. Yes, I think there are ways that we should be looking at it to make sure we are doing the right thing. I think it's great that we can actually target veterans, target certain individuals that can really use the help. I think that's great. Yeah, we should definitely keep track of what's going on. I don't want to do an MOU that isn't going to be effective and isn't going to really hone in on what we need to. But I think this is a good thing. So, with that.
Through the chair, you have public comment.
Oh, there is one online. Let's hear from the public. Is there a conversation in the room?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Pastor Mike Bextrom.
Okay, fill out a form and jump in.
Thank you.
Did you go to the online one?
Yeah, let's do online while he's writing.
Working on it.
Okay.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Pastor Mike Bextrom, my pastor at the Wairika Methodist Church. For the past 3+ years, we've opened up our church as a warming shelter in our community. I don't claim to be an expert, but having a heart for people, I do have some pretty good knowledge that I've learned over these years. This last year, we opened our church up, and sitting here briefly, I must say that in listening to all of you, you've all said things that are absolutely correct. And I'd like to comment on that for just a moment. Just this past year, our first night in the warming shelter, one of the people that came in was going through withdrawals, detoxing. We're not equipped for that. They got sick and they went. But what did happen was something else. It got so cold, we had 25 people in one night. The health department was fantastic. They had people driving around and picking them up. But there's a lot of issues with all this, but we have to do something. And I'm going to say something that probably won't be agreed upon, or it might be. In my own summation, homelessness has become a business, a money-making business, and it sickens me. It really does. These people want the help. Not all of them, you're absolutely correct. Some won't come in. We did something a little bit different, though. This gentleman back here, Terry, he lived on the hill for a while. I met him, exceptional gentleman. He's actually lived in my home for the last 18 months. He goes to work almost full time. But he came down and volunteered with another homeless gentleman at the church, and they ran the shelter for us. The community, there was an outpouring from people. They brought food. There was a Catholic priest that showed up. I still can't figure out who it is. And brought groceries and things down. Our wonderful Indian casino sent down blankets and pillows. People want to do something. People want to help. we're so polarized by being taken advantage of and lied to about things. But I realize this also. Each person that was there is someone's brother, mother, or father, sister, son, and daughter. And it's sad. The young man that got sick, he slept the rest of the time. I was there that whole night, but I realized something. Unfortunately, 3.5 years ago in Mount Shasta, well, actually, 5 years ago, 4.5 years ago, I lost my son to fentanyl. I found him dead. And it hits home with me. And I realized that this young man was about the age that my son was. It's serious, folks. And until it hits home, and even being a pastor, it really is a serious thing. And I went up to this young man, I asked him, is there something that I can help you with? Can I help you? And he said, what are you proposing? And I said, well, I'd like you to talk to someone. He said, no, absolutely. He got up and out of went. We do need the housing. We need it in both sectors for the homeless, and we need it
time
for the people that are coming here. So I encourage you to do something. I'm not that familiar with the program, but on the surface, I'm for it. But thank you for allowing me to come here today. And God bless you, all of you, for what you're doing. Thank you.
Thank you.
I cannot figure out how to get her to unmute, to tell her to unmute. Colleen, would you like to unmute? You can speak if you'd like. She should be able to unmute and speak if she'd like on her end, but we're not getting that.
Well, I'm thinking maybe we should take a quick break and see if we can't get that worked out and come back in 6 minutes. We'll come back in 10 minutes.